Now, these are sounds of different things that other people have recorded.
When I was your age, television was called books.
I feel so utterly exposed and vulnerable. And not in that fun, spanky way.
Oh, Jimmy, don't believe everything you see on TV.
The metric system is the tool of the devil. My target's 40 rods to the hogshead, and that's the way I likes it.
The question is, are you still master of your domain?
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Take advantage of this special holiday offer.
First, that's just my opinion, yada, yada, yada.
Let's all do some media math. Take a pencil, pen, calculator if you have to, and add up all the time you spend watching TV, listening to the radio, and reading magazines and newspapers. Plus, watching movies in theaters or at home. Plus, playing video games. Plus, looking at advertisements on the street, in the mall, and on people's clothes. Plus, listening to your MP3, CD, tape, or record player. Plus, time surfing the web for information, entertainment, and all those emails. Plus, time spent talking to people about all your media experiences and listening to theirs. Did I miss anything? It's an understatement to say we live in a media-saturated world, and so, some people believe that various forms of media education and literacy are today's intellectual survival skills. Just like the basic need to read and write, media literacy stresses an audiovisual education capable of making media production more diverse and inclusive, and media consumption more critical and curious. My name is Paul Baines, and in the winter of 2005, I interviewed Toronto area teachers, students, student teachers, and academics who are interested in media literacy. I wanted to gather and share their thoughts in order to give some shape and support for the practice of looking at the media and ourselves. Here's Michelle Wiley, a student teacher at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education, known as OISE, at the University of Toronto, and Mark Lipton, a professor in the School of English and Theatre Studies at the University of Guelph, on what media literacy means to them.
To me, it means giving students the tools to deconstruct the media that they see around them, that they see on a daily basis, but not just that. It's not about protecting students from the evils of media. It's about giving them the tools to view, but also giving them background. So not just the how is media produced, not just what are the aspects of film, what are the aspects of a newspaper, but also the who produces this media, and then also the why is this media produced this way, and also the so what does it mean to you, like having students really be able to analyze how the media that they watch affects them and what it means to them. So not just how it affects them adversely, but how connected and tied they are to it.
I think a lot of media literacy is about getting people to ask questions. It's not about being critical. It's just about being curious. What kind of questions? What does this remind me of? What did I like about it? Why was it funny? Who else would like this? What would my best friend, mother, sister, daughter say about this show? What makes Sesame Street educational is how it's negotiated, whether it's a parent, a caregiver, or a teacher talking about Elmo or Ernie and Bert or Big Bird or what have you. It's the discourse that ensues that makes media educational.
Grade 11 students at York Memorial Collegiate Institute start off their discussion talking about advertising and consumerism.
Yeah, you can't just storm out and say media is evil, we must all boycott media. You just
no, I mean, media isn't evil at all. Yeah. I think it can be used to slant things one way and slant things the other way, but it's also a really powerful tool in the same sense. And we can't just eliminate advertising because our economy does depend on advertising and it does depend on consuming. But we as the consumer have to make a decision in our mind and say, do we really need this? Is it something, I absolutely need? Because the more we just buy and buy and buy and buy and buy and buy without even noticing, you know, what this might affect, not only the environment, but the people who made it and all the other issues that go into the product. But just, you know, do I need it? Is it something I need? Because the more we consume, the more, you know, we're going to consume in the worst position we're going to be in.
So the problem isn't really advertising per se, it's how much we know about advertising and what's being sent to us.
Isabel Kim is a PhD student in the Curriculum, Teaching, and Learning Department at OISE, U of T, and has worked with youth and community groups using media for personal and political awareness.
I don't think media literacy is a matter of convincing people necessarily that they're affected by what they watch, because I think all consumers, I mean, it's not like when people are consuming media, they're necessarily just passive viewers and nothing is going on. And then if you're media literate, you're completely active and you're always thinking about the media literacy and so on at the same time. I think it's a bit of a combination of both. It would entail some kind of critical understanding about the media and to understand media or understand reading or writing or anything in particular. I think it's always good to do a combination of theory and practice. So understanding it as a viewer or consumer of media, and also understanding media from the perspective of what is involved in production. And so I think it's helpful in doing media literacy work to have a combined approach of learning about the theory and learning how to interpret media, but also learning how to do it, or at least what's involved in the making of.
Lastly, Mark Lipton on the question of what media literacy means to him.
It's about integrating media into the classroom. It's about building a bridge between what goes on outside the classroom with what we want to be going on inside the classroom. It's about sort of looking at television and media as the first curriculum, and then figuring out how to negotiate that. I think it's a new, some people would call radical, educational movement. I think it's progressive curriculum and progressive pedagogy.
If you please, sir, we want to see the wizard right away, all four of us.
The internet? Is that thing still around?
You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Lots of gray skies in our future. Details at 11.
Batteries not included.
Everyone I spoke to was enthusiastic about media literacy and is doing their best to further its development and reach. However, a number of issues make this work more challenging and interesting. A common theme among those I talked to was the lack of media literacy standards and measurements, and the marginal weight it's given within both the language arts curriculum for elementary students and English curriculum for high school. Professional support for teacher and student-teacher training was also an area of concern. While mandated to be taught, there are few courses in media literacy in Faculty of Education programs. There are additional qualifications courses where highly motivated teachers can take after their first year for extra fees, but many wonder about the quality of teaching under this system as a whole. Sometimes, simply watching a video can count as media literacy. There is also a negative tension between the practice of making media and being critical. With the lack of weight in the curriculum and teacher training, few teachers are able to build lessons supporting critical practice. And this balance is key for some. Michelle Wiley defines the word critical for her.
Well, the teacher really is the starting point, I think, for a critical focus in the classroom, but it's about questioning. Questioning what may seem to be common sense, what may seem to be the norm. And I think we sometimes can underestimate how young kids can start to do that, and how beneficial it is to them as people, but also to society, to have people that are able to question what's given to them.
Some think media literacy is marginalized as a subject because it questions positions of power, whereas its potential to create professional communicators for media and cultural industries is its only saving grace in public education. While all would agree that the integration of both constructing and deconstructing is the best practice for media literacy learning, even this practice or pedagogy needs responsible consideration. Mark Lipton on this.
Media literacy is more than just a particular set of content, a particular set of questions. It's a practice, it's a process, it's an approach. And it means that, on the one hand, there's a media curriculum, right? Things we want young people to know about media, like, for example, who owns what, and, you know, Disney's racist practices. But there's also a pedagogy, a way to make young people, all people, aware of that, other than just telling them. The great thing about Freire and other sort of radical educationists is that they work against the banking model of education. The dominant model of education from the time that school started was, you know, teachers make deposits in the minds of young people and then test young people on how well that information has done. And I'm not a banker. I see myself more as a gardener, and each of my students is a delicate flower. My job is to help them grow into the most beautiful flower they can be. That means I have to get to know them.
For example, Mark also talks about the digital divides amongst males and females, the urban and the rural schools, and the young and the old. He promotes understanding the environment students are coming from and adapting your content and process in order to address divides that privilege one group over another.
If I had a dollar for every brain you don't have, I'd have $1.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
I'm at the top of my game. I'm right up there with the big dogs. Girls, come on. Leave the saving of the world to the men? I don't think so.
You're a great mom. You're beautiful and you're smart and you work so hard.
I'm the dude. So that's what you call me, you know? His dudeness or duder or, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Now that I've introduced what media literacy is and what are some of the issues within it, it's time to talk about how to practice it in the classroom. Some grade 11 students remember as far back as grade 9 looking for subliminal messages in ads, but now they talk about how different people are portrayed or represented in the media. I talk with a class of grade 11 media study students about who they see on billboards and TV, starting with what women look like.
Skinny, pretty, bikinis on, yeah. Like, you don't really see a fat girl on a billboard. That never happens. But
you have, like, those slim girls in, like, bikinis holding, like, a drill.
They do that to get you to look at it. And if you see the girls, then you see what else is there, too.
Yeah. They get things that catch your eye. Once it catches your eye, you see their product.
It's like beer commercials with fat guys drinking beer and they have a bunch of pretty girls on them. And guys will think, oh, it's your beer, you're a good girl.
One of the easiest discussions to start is talking about how different racial and ethnic groups are portrayed in the media. Students can describe and agree on these stereotypes, even if they have trouble defining the word itself.
One of the classes we're watching In Living Color, you see how they made fun of, like, the black girl, saying how she has all these babies, daddies all around, and love big jewelry earrings and everything, and those long nails. And then we're saying stereotypes for Asians, they're smart, most have glasses.
And they're usually not over 5 feet tall.
Short.
Stereotype.
Always eat rice. Yeah.
No karate.
Well, white people, what are some stereotypes about white people?
They play hockey.
Yep.
There's two stereotypes of them.
Yeah.
There's two?
Yeah.
There's a trailer trash.
And then there's
the rich white ones.
And they're the ones that'll jump off of a plane from, like, how high in the sky. Like, they do
crazy stuff.
Crazy things.
And while they can debate or rationalize these stereotypes, they certainly don't like or agree with how teenagers, as a group, are often stereotyped in the media.
For some reason, whenever they do, like, TV shows that talk about real teenagers, all the teenagers are always doing drugs.
So at some point, key terms like stereotype, representation, race, and gender need to be unpacked. Starting with the students' media experiences usually works best. Another important term which encompasses all of these is construction. The process of purposely shaping our oral and visual experience through a media text in order to create meaning. This act works best when it seems natural or remains invisible to the audience. Michelle Wiley supports the practice of asking why when it comes to these constructions.
Children's films do a lot to promote stereotypes, a lot. And it's I'm not saying that we shouldn't have children watch Disney films. It's not about Disney's, it's about giving parents and kids the tools to understand that, you know, a Hispanic person is not always a Chihuahua, you know. So it's not about not having the kids watch it, but it's about, you know, well, just asking the questions of why and why there isn't other kinds of representation too. So I just think it's a really important issue, and I think that there's so many jokes. You know, there's so many racial jokes, there's so many homophobic jokes that just go by the wayside in shows. And I see them more and more. And, you know, sure, it's kind of acceptable, but you know, people can argue, well, you know, that's just accepted, but it shouldn't be. So I just think it's time to make a change in that area.
Hi there, I'm Hank Hill.
I am Khan Supanusimpon.
So that's pronounced Khan, right? Nice to meet you. So are you Chinese or Japanese?
I live in California last 20 years, but first come from Laos.
Huh?
Laos. We Laotian.
The ocean? What ocean?
We are Laotian. From Laos, stupid. It's a landlocked country in Southeast Asia. It's between Vietnam and Thailand, okay?
So are you Chinese or Japanese?
Duh.
There were several common themes when I asked people about their pedagogy for media education. Over and over, I was told the following things. Start where students are at. Connect examples and questions with their lives and the formation and attachment to their identities. To be self-aware of your role and identity as a teacher and aim to foster critical thinkers in a safe environment. Balance and integrate the creative and reflective processes. Encourage student-directed and collective choices. Be prepared to work from the descriptive to the conceptual and reflective. Encourage students to talk about their media experiences and habits. And finally, look for ways to promote discussion about the students themselves and their identity through critical dialogue between themselves and the world. Mark Lipton on this back and forth.
The notion about self and identity that I was talking about earlier, I mean, that's the back and forth in your own head. And the more you have that back and forth in your own head, the more you have a stronger sense of self. And the way you develop that back and forth in your own head is to have a back and forth outside of your head. You know, before we can develop strong intrapersonal skills, we develop stronger interpersonal skills.
From my interviews, here are some examples of how to engage in media literacy. Asking students to compare their parents' consumer habits to their own. Distinguishing different student groups at the school, such as rockers and jocks, and ask them to label, however difficult or weird, their own identity. Bringing in an ad and talking about the target audience or what makes it appealing or unappealing. Looking at women and men in advertising and talking about different roles and expectations. Making spoof ads that play with the original message and are remade to reveal student perspectives. Booking class visits to TV production studios such as The Vox on TVO. And during the editing process, talk about the construction of meaning. Media studies teacher Nadia Hone asked her students at York Memorial Collegiate to write rap lyrics expressing and translating media theories like Marshall McLuhan's Hot and Cold Media. Here's Tyrone performing Amon's rap, and Peter doing his own.
Hot and cold, both new and old, will always be the same. Hot meter filled with data to use to fill your brain. Now cold is low and hot is high when it comes to definition. And if it seems confusing, then clear your head and listen. Movies hotter, cartoons cold, and watching TV participation's low. Seminars are high participation, though, in case you didn't know.
There are four major laws of media today that control what we do, think, and what we say. Law 1, it all enhances the way we survive, from TVs to radios to what we drive. Law 2, with all this new technology, it makes shit obsolete, it makes it all disappear when we press delete. Law 3, to retrieve something is to bring it back. To do drugs is like smoking crack. It makes you stupid and dumbs you down. It's like the entire world gathering downtown. Law 4 is the last law. It's all about reversing. It causes problems like drowning when we're all submersing. It's all about the laws that make up the media. It's all about the corporate garbage that they feed you. This is what you need to learn. This is what you need to know. That's all for this verse. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Michelle Wiley shares her process for introspection and media literacy.
I think introspection is a really important thing. I do it in pretty much as the start of any unit. It's something to do with, your preconceptions. I did a unit on issues facing Aboriginal Canadians today. We talked a lot about our initial stereotypes, our initial feelings and fears about Aboriginal peoples, because it's, unfortunately, that is something that's ingrained in Canadian society, that there's this problem, that it's this problem. And so I thought it would be best to get it out first. And this was with grade six kids, and they got it out to a large degree, and we talked about it, and by the end I felt like that they had gained a new understanding of their own biases. And what we did was we talked about what identity means to start, and we talked about what cultural identity means, what makes up a cultural identity, and so I had them give me some examples of what their cultural identity might be, and then I asked them if they felt like they had more than one cultural identity, and in this particular, the first class, it was a largely a white upper middle class classroom. Very few felt like they had any other. They didn't really understand what I meant by having more than one identity. I've previously done it in another class where it was quite different, but in this class, then we watched a video, which is an NFB video called Urban Elder. It's an excellent video about the struggles of Native Canadians moving from a reserve to the city, to an urban center, and how it's difficult to negotiate two identities. And the kids were quite moved by that. And I had them write a response to it. We then used poetry, Native poetry, of resistance, to talk about. And this is a grade six class. Like they really, yeah. So we looked at, there's a poem called I Lost My Talk by Rita Jo, and it's about the residential schools that many Aboriginal people, unfortunately, were put into, and it's about the power relationships between the Europeans and the Aboriginal people. We also, it's not really media literacy, but I feel like it goes hand in hand as the critical literacy of texts. So their textbook that they had, I really felt very strongly against. It's a board-sanctioned textbook, but it's very Eurocentric. And so what we did was when we read, I focused them at the beginning before we read from the textbook and explained to them that, everything's written from a particular perspective. And I think that's something that you need to do all the time in media literacy. And like I was saying, talk about the who is creating this. So we looked at the authors, just, we don't know who they are, but we said, okay, these people wrote this textbook, and this is from their perspective. This is from their place in the world. And when I'm talking to you about stuff, remember, this is from my perspective. We don't have an Aboriginal person from the 1700s here talking to us, so it's again from my perspective. And I think even though it's with a textbook, it can translate to reading a newspaper or listening to a rap song or something. And that really made me feel more comfortable by using the text, and it actually gave me more to work with than if it had been something that was perhaps more politically correct.
By leading this process and offering questions, alternative ideas, discussion and reflection, Michelle witnessed changes in the students' original perceptions that were well grounded in critical thought and creative expression.
Did you ever think that maybe there's more to life than being really, really, really ridiculously good looking?
There's something screwy around here.
Just get one of those inflatable women. But make sure it's a woman, though. Because one time I...
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
If you're looking for more ideas and resources for teaching media literacy, the following Canadian groups may be of interest. The Association for Media Literacy. Website is at www.aml.ca. The Media Awareness Network, www.media-awareness.ca. Media Watch Canada at www.mediawatch.ca. The National Film Board, www.nfb.ca. And the Center for Media and Culture and Education at the University of Toronto at http://cmce.oise.utoronto.ca. And two important American groups, the Media Education Foundation at www.mediaed.org and the Action Coalition for Media Education at www.acmecoalition.org. The pedagogical connection between creativity and reflection, or practice and theory, has been picked up by universities and colleges. York and Ryerson universities have partnered to offer a graduate degree in communication and culture, and Guelph University and Humber College are now offering an undergraduate degree in media studies. Both programs are experiments in building links between critical thinking and professional practice. However, time will tell whose needs these programs are meeting, as institutions compete for students and students compete for jobs. Hopefully, not lost in these new programs and the practice of media literacy is some reflection of why this literacy is so important. Here are some grade 11 students reflecting on the importance of their class.
Well, I mean, ads play a huge role in our lives. I mean, you turn on your TV, ads, commercials. You turn on the radio, commercials. You walk to school, you got billboards all over the place. I mean, advertising, like it or not, is a huge part of our lives, and we should at least have some sort of course in school where we can learn more about it.
To make us more, like, aware of what's being, like, said to us, like, because it's not exactly what you see, I guess. You have to, like, go more in depth and, like, and it just makes us realize, kind of, that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as Doug said, it is everywhere, even on the back doors of washrooms and elevators. Recently, when we went to TVO, it was in the elevator, and we found that there's nothing you can look at. You have to look at the little screen up there.
Because it's like a TV kind of thing.
Yeah, it sort of hypnotizes you. I don't know. And the more you know about it, the more you understand it, and if we learn to enjoy it, like the spoof ads, that's really giving us a sense of humor and to look at it that way. So it's better than getting annoyed at advertising. Yeah.
Well, the one thing I've taken out of this course so far is that everything's going to have some sort of bias to it, and I think it's just important that you recognize that. And when you look at an ad or you look at, you know, the news or any kind of media form, you just need to question it and be sort of skeptical, just to the point where you're not just believing everything that you're seeing, because we're getting a lot of messages thrown at us over and over and over again through the media. So that's the one thing probably I'm getting out of this course the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like, now, because of media studies, I understand, or, like, I would be driving by a billboard, and I look at it now and read the line and try to understand it more than before. I used to drive by and just say, well, I'm tired of seeing so much billboards around. Now I learn to understand what a billboard means and how much work people put in to get one billboard done.
Yeah. Like before, I used to pass by, I just used to look at the picture and, you know, look at the pretty girls. And then now, when I look at it, I try to, like, see what message they're trying to send.
A small group of grade 12 students were able to compare and personalize grade 11 and grade 12 media studies courses.
I think mostly the grade 11 media deals with the advertising and the making of movies and lighting and effects and all that. And the grade 12 media is mostly political stuff and how much you're allowed to put in, how much gets censored out, or what filters it goes through. I think what I like most about the media is getting to learn and see different things that I took for granted before, like, I can't just watch TV or I can't just look at the news now, because now I'm thinking, how did they put that on there? What lighting did they use? Who was filming? What angle did it come from? In a way, it kind of ruins it for you, but you get to understand more. you're not as gullible as before.
For media education, the one biggest thing I enjoyed in grade 11 was filming our movie. The movie had no odds or ends or anything like that, but it was kind of put together a documentary about an indie band, and it was just so much fun. And I think thus far, I think probably one of my most memorable moments at the school too. And media, the class gave me that opportunity, and gave others in the class the opportunity to film and to work with the camera and work with the script and to learn different parts to film. And I don't know, I just think that not everyone gets the opportunity to do that. What I've learned about grade 12 media so far is people like Noam Chomsky and Marshall McLuhan, you learn about names. This is prior to taking the course. You just think about names, you think about, you know, you've heard something to do with them in the media, but you don't really know exactly. And I think getting to know them, get to know their theories, and getting to know their kind of what the point they were trying to get across was, is now, you know, it's just very valuable now, because you can use their thoughts and you can use their ideas to give ourselves another perspective of our world. We had the opportunity as well at the end of the year to have a film festival at our school, and well, that's something you don't normally organize. And well, that for one thing, very memorable. And we were able to watch everyone else's, our fellow classmates' videos, and you know, it was night, kind of popcorn and everything like that, and sit back and relax and have a few laughs. And it was very interesting. We had a few judges that kind of gave some feedback, and a couple awards were given out at the end of the night. There was no crying or acceptance speeches, however. So, but I mean, it was great, and it gave us kind of like, it wasn't exactly the real thing, but to us it was something bigger than what we're usually used to. So
I think what excites me the most about media education just in general is, for me, it's something that I can apply to like our day-to-day world and things around me, whereas other classes that I'm taking or we've been sort of forced to take through high school, like, I don't see where I'm ever going to use calculus personally, like some people might, but I think that media education is something that, unless you live in a box, everyone in our society is exposed to media, so it's learning about something that is truly a part of our lives. Yeah, a lot of our projects were like to create our own product and advertise it, and then we had the film project near the end, a lot of things like that, and I think that really helps that when you get to the grade 12 and you start discussing in depth, once you realize what it's like to actually be holding a camera or to create a campaign for a product, it's easier to understand it once you've done something or something similar to that.
Students and teachers agreed that the portrayal of male and female bodies in the media undermines healthy self-images and esteem. And while the pressures are greater and the stereotypes more constricting for women, men are not far behind.
How forceful you are, Brad. Such a perfect specimen of manhood. So dominant.
I'm cutting your head. I'm cutting your head. Hey, I just renamed your firm Merrill Lynch and the Flathead. I cut you.
What's it mean to be G.I. Joe?
America's number one fighting force, sir.
And that means?
Big muscles, sir.
And?
Big missiles, sir.
Were you hard of hearing, sucker?
Oh, behave. Yeah, baby.
I just want us to have a nice, candid conversation about life and romance and what's wrong with you.
I guess I have a lot of things to ponder.
Well, the average male the male that everyone sees on TV is, like, you know, the muscular built. And that's what, like, any guy wants to be, I guess, because, like, every guy you talk to nowadays, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm working my abs or, like, my biceps or whatever. And, but it's true, though. That's what, like, all the comments. You don't ever see, like, a guy that's, I'm not going to say, like, overweight or anything, but, like, that doesn't have the six-pack wearing, like, doing, like, a Calvin Klein ad or something like that. Like, I don't know, because that's just not, like, the perfect male image, just like with the women, how you have to be, like, extremely thin or whatever.
If you want to be like Arnold, buy my product.
Michelle Wiley on the representation of women and the role of the media.
Well, I know for me personally, growing up, that images in the media were a strong you know, factor on how I felt about myself. And as I grew older, I was able to be more critical of that and to, you know, try to divorce myself from those sorts of feelings. But it's a difficult thing. And I know that even now, I was talking about the Swan, things, shows like that. I mean, they're so ridiculous. And from a critical perspective, you can see the insanity of them. But it doesn't stop the fact that you may be affected by them. And there's a lack of representation of what I would say strong, real women in the media, and especially from role models for girls. It's not to say that there aren't at all, but I think that the ones that are acted upon or, you know, really the ones that are modeled are, you know, it sounds bad, but our Britney Spears, Hilary Duff, you know, the particular image of femininity and what it means to be a girl. And I see it especially in grade six. It's just, you know, if you don't fit that image, it's really, you have a really, really hard time. You know, the most you can do as a teacher is try to present other images of women and to support girls when they're having a, you know, be there to talk to them. And I also am a strong believer in, you know, advocacy for on the extreme of anorexia and bulimia, and I think that although it's an extreme, it's one of those issues. I'd say every woman has a body image problem, and I know I'd say it's pretty much true. And it may not result in starvation, it may not result in bulimia, but I think it's an epidemic, so I think it's something that has to be dealt with.
Another key theme of why media literacy is important is its role in political repression and empowerment. We'll hear from Michelle Wiley, Mark Lipton, and Nadia Ahone.
I think we have to understand that the media is an educational force in its own right. I mean, for instance, Disney actually states in its mandate that it educates our children. So we have to know that there's a curriculum going on in the media. So if we, and the curriculum isn't always a progressive one, and it's the ideologies that are put forth by the media, you know, the ideologies of femininity and of particular races aren't always the best ones. So if we can instill in children this questioning, we're going to make a society where people are able to deconstruct those images and maybe change the way that we view women, the way that we view different races. And, you know, it goes beyond that, but that's just one.
Part of the point is that we are also involved in media. We live in media environments, and they become invisible to us. And if they become more visible, then we'll have stronger sort of skills for avoiding containment. And it sort of goes back to Freire's notion of pedagogy of the oppressed. It's in a lot of ways there are the haves and the have-nots, and not just in terms of media. I think I read somewhere that 2% of the North American population owns 45% of the wealth. So that's a significant number. And, you know, politically, whether you're on the left or the right, both sides are trying to sort of mask the idea that we don't have a political voice. And it's just not the case. And I think a lot of it has to do with being politically motivated, trying to make people, young people in particular, more aware that they have an active role in our democracy, and they need to be citizens. So it's not just about critical thinking. For me, it's about citizenship.
The thing is that the power in this world to make the decisions that affect our lives are held by so few people. And if we are more informed as a public, we can actually make changes that go against that sometimes. And there are so few companies that own the media outlets out there, and that impacts what we get to know in the media. We're not getting the whole story, and we're not allowing, I guess I'm going to quote Noam Chomsky here, but democracy to actually happen. and we can't, we're living in a democratic society where all voices are supposed to be heard and we're supposed to have all these rights, but media literacy actually allows us to understand a bit more so we can achieve that goal.
With a growing amount of experience behind them, students and teachers are optimistic that the health of the media environment can improve with dialogue and curiosity, and as more media consumers and producers are now in the classroom. Isabel Kim shares her experience of making media with a group of young people.
I gave the example of, representing homelessness or doing a documentary on homelessness, let's say in a social studies class or in a community project or whatever. As they're doing it, you could bring up questions, and hopefully these questions will come up anyway from the youth themselves. But you could facilitate discussions around, well, how are we going to represent and what homelessness is? How in the way that we film it and how we approach the topic, is that going to affect how do we identify with the subject matter? How do we represent it? How will it be taken up by audiences? And that's something we can't predict, but we can also brainstorm possibilities and try to treat each subject matter with integrity and as compassionately as we can.
I hope this documentary has introduced some people to the language and lessons of media education, and that it can be part of an ongoing discussion on the role and direction of education in and outside the classroom. I want to thank all the media studies students at York Memorial who spoke on this documentary, as well as Natty Ahone, Michelle Wiley, Mark Lipton, and Isabel Kim. Comments to this program can be emailed to me at pjbaines@yahoo.ca. I'm Paul Baines. Thanks for listening.